When I was thinking of, when I was considering what to speak about today, I was thinking about the marvelous relationship we have with bodies, the way in which we create our energy flow, the way in which our spirit manifests through this physical form, and how dependent we are on the vehicle we use. I know that, for example, I brought with me my very old Mac PowerBook. In a few months, it's going to be 8 years old. In computer world, 8-year-old computer is practically somewhere above dinosaur. It must be somewhere in the Neanderthal era. And I was trying to do this and trying to do that, and it just, there wasn't enough facility for the computer to handle it all. And then I was thinking how dependent I was on this piece of hardware, this machine. For example, just to do what I do here on Saturday requires extremely powerful machines. I have to have dedicated video cards. I can't just use any old video card. It has to be very powerful because I'm doing a lot of video conferencing, a lot of broadcasting out from these machines. I have to use dedicated interfaces for audio, each machine with its own dedicated interface. So I'm very dependent on the proper functioning of the machines or of the vehicles that I use to transmit this spoken word and this physical image. Now, when I also translate this into my biological form, which is also a vehicle by which I share my energy, by which I share my consciousness with you, by which I do things, by which I manifest actions, and by which I create and maintain relationships, I find that this biological form is, it's very important that it has a proper function. For example, if I have a headache, I'm just using these as examples. If I have a headache and I were to try to speak with somebody, my expression would be translated through the pain or translated through the pressure I feel in my head. Or if I feel stress, stress is one of those unbelievably powerful ingredients in life. If my energy, my consciousness, is experiencing stress, then my expressions would translate through this stress, and they would be colored by it. Similarly, if I'm experiencing happiness or some other kind of what we consider positive emotion, my communication, my energy would be colored by that feeling that I have, that emotion that I have. Now, to a large extent, this is unavoidable. I know that we can speak about avoiding stress or avoiding being influenced. But as far as I can understand, and maybe I'm not the best judge of this, and I'll explain why. But as far as I can understand, you can't avoid being influenced. Now, I know that I am more, I'm a sensitive person. I can work with others. I can help them understand how they feel, help them understand things in their life, or I act in a mystic way sometimes. So in my general nature is that I allow myself to be influenced in order to connect to or empathize with another person's energy or another situation or another thing. so that I may be able to render some service or offer myself in service to other people. So I understand that in my particular case, allowing myself to be influenced is certainly part of what I am. Now, there are other persons who absolutely refuse to acknowledge any influence that the external world or the external atmosphere would have upon them. And in their refusal to acknowledge the influence that would come upon them, they manage to avoid understanding their own situation. Now, I know there are times when you don't want to be influenced by others. I know I have also, I mean, I talk about myself because I know my own experience very intimately. But I know that when I have been in crisis situations, something clicks in me that turns my perception and awareness into something different. Another part of my consciousness clicks in or pushes into gear. I think this is related to my training and experience as a fireman, where you have to switch from being dead asleep at night to full action mode with an insane fire in front of you. So, or perhaps it's also part of my nature, but I've seen that there have been riots in Mayapur, crises which, honestly speaking, you don't want to be in. And I noticed that I, who am usually quite open to external energies, becomes very closed to the crisis. In other words, detached from the crisis or detached from the particular energies which are screaming at me to either be afraid or to run away or to fight them or something like that. And I see that it clicks and something else happens. I become detached from it and look at it from another point of view, the point of view of calming things down, the point of view of keeping peace, the point of view of accepting whatever it is and not trying to correct things on a very sympathetic level, but rather on a level of taking charge and making sure things are done right. So that is also being influenced, because that's not usually how I am. And so the external crisis influences me. So I've seen people who are very cool or very detached also be influenced by the situations they are in, which turn them into something that is responding to these influences. And I think it's common sense to say that whenever you respond to an influence, that the influence has an effect on you. The influence is causing you to be impacted in such a way that you have to transform to deal with it. And this adaptation is one of the natural principles in which all life is based in this world. Adaptation. Darwin used that principle, which was so significant, so important, to show that evolution, it doesn't matter whether you believe it took place or not, that's not the point, was based upon adaptation. Those species, those living entities who could adapt to their environment, who could adapt to their existence, they were able to survive. They were able to develop. We see this all the time in the world. If you even think about it nowadays, the oxygen level on this planet is so different, so reduced from the oxygen level long ago. We have managed to reduce the amount of oxygen in our atmosphere to such a degree that our capacities, physical development, cellular capacities are reduced because of it. So it's important that we understand this adaptation. Even on a global level, we are capable of adapting. Now, sometimes people don't have faith in themselves like that. They don't realize the degree to which they are affected by their environment. They don't realize the degree to which their physical being is affected by that which is around them. When I just flew back from Russia, the entire trip took 27 hours. And I mean, from door to door. Of course, I also went to the airport too early, but that's another thing. We had fun. We were sitting in the restaurant of the airport. It was a bunch of tables, cafeteria, drinking water and pretending it was vodka and pretending we were a bunch of Russians drinking vodka and singing Russian folk songs in the in the cafeteria. But the idea of just sitting there on an airplane for so long and then having to wait in an airport for so long and sitting on another little tiny itsy-bitsy airplane shaking like this and blowing around in a huge storm, and you just land and like the whole trip is so incredibly exhausting. It affects you. There's nothing you can do about it. It doesn't matter who you are. You, even the stewardesses, they fly all the time. It's not like they are not affected. It's not like they don't get jet lag. Jet lag's not something you get used to. It's not like, I mean, you adjust to it if you have time, but jet lag affects everybody. It's not like you can ever become immune to jet lag. You don't become immune to the incredible radiation that's in an airplane. The radiation that comes from the cosmos is very focused in this little tin can you are flying in. Or affected by the sound, the incredible roar that's all around in an airplane. Or affected by the people that are all around you. Or just affected by changes of water, changes of air, changes of food, change of climate. My God, to talk about change of climate, you know, it's like freezing over there with snow, and you come over here and it's, you know, it's 32 degrees, 33 degrees. So it's like, wow, 0 to 33. That's pretty extreme. And you have to deal with things like this. It's a question of adapting. What if you don't adapt? How do you live? But the amazing thing is you do adapt. You adapt to changes. As weird as it may seem to my own head, I actually adapted to the cold over there. Okay, it was cold. It's not that I was happy about it, but I adapted. I survived. I didn't die. I didn't end up in the hospital. And people think, for example, in terms of money. Nowadays, as we spoke, this hysteria that it's there in the world of lose, we're going to lose again, oh God. But people don't realize you can adapt. You can adapt to anything if you want to. Loss, you can adapt to. I never said it was easy. It's not like having to adapt to loss or having to adapt to extreme trauma or even cosmic trauma is easy. It may be the most difficult thing you ever had to do, but we can adapt because it is built into our system that adaptation is the underlying principle of our lives. We adapt all the time. to other people, to other situations, to relationship problems, to good news, bad news, changes, crises. We adapt. Even death is an adaptation. Let's say there's so much stress upon my body that it loses the capacity to support life. So death takes place. Death is also an adaptation. It's the spirit and the spirit's vehicles compromise with life, where the compromise comes to the point where we have to adapt because we can't go on living. So we leave this situation. Like, for example, when you have a hurricane and the hurricane knocks over your house. So you adapt. I'm not saying you're happy with the adapting. I'm not saying you're ecstatic about it. You may be miserable. You may be sad. You may be totally devastated. But you do adapt. You adapt by finding some other place to have some basic shelter. And you start again. You correct, you fix as best you can. Now, some people adapt in a way which we would consider to be not very positive. We might call that in another sense compensation or compensating. To compensate. For example, it might be so depressed from a loss. I might be so depressed from something that might have happened to me that I compensate for this by eating a lot or stuffing my face with sugar or drinking a lot of alcohol or taking some kind of drugs or doing something which I think compensates for the difficulties that I'm facing. It's like if you had a scale and I have this huge weight on the pain side. So I try to compensate by putting things on the other side to nullify the pain. So I might take so many drugs or drink so much alcohol or even just eat so much or go into wild hedonism or whatever it might be as an attempt to dull the pain, as an attempt to compensate. Because this idea of adaptation is so intrinsic, inherent within us, that we have to do something to balance out our situation. Now, of course, adapting in this way is troublesome, because then you get addicted. There's this compensating factor, and I become addicted to it because it's that thing which is keeping me somehow or another balanced. And I need more and more of it because your body adapts to it. So you need more drugs, need more alcohol, more food, more hedonism. Because the body adapts and becomes dulled to the stimulation. Because you aren't capable of just enjoying unlimitedly these things in this biological form, because you get dull after a while when there's so much tension or stress on a particular aspect of your life. And even you try to put more and more, it may not work. You can even be dulled to pain. There's so much pain that you just simply can't deal with it anymore. You kind of start fading away. So I suppose the underlying lesson of this is related to, number one, understanding that we are adapting beings. We adjust our consciousness. We adjust our energy to adapt to situations that we're in. But that number one is that understanding. Number two is to accept this adaptation. Accept the inevitability of that kind of transformation. It's inevitable that adaptation will take place. Inevitable means you can't avoid to adapt. You might not adapt in a positive way, as in the form of addictive compensation. We just spoke about it. That might not be positive, but even though you might not adapt in a positive way, the adaptation that takes place is inevitable. You cannot remain neutral. Everyone is affected by that which is around them. So accepting that adaptation actually means to use it to your advantage. And I find that's the key. To understand what's going on and use it to your advantage. To see something in this energy which is forcing you to adapt, by forcing you to deal with it, and seeing how to use it in a positive fashion. To see how to use it to your advantage. Now, that's not an easy thing to do. Sometimes it takes a complete transformation of your point of view. Let's just take pain, for instance. Pain is a very fascinating phenomenon. It's a phenomenon. There are people, for example, in China, acupuncturists, who instead of using anesthesia, like for example in the hospital, instead of using some anesthesia to make you lose conscious awareness of the pain, they use acupuncture. So they can use needles in specific meridians, specific points, which affect the nervous system in such a way that you do not feel pain. So pain is a nervous system phenomenon. It is some kind of signal stating the usual state of affairs in this particular location is not present. Some unusual state of affairs is present. So it's sending a signal to the brain. So the brain says, this hurts. So we say, ow. But correspondingly, we pull away from the source of the pain, if we can. So the pain is a signal to us to do something about it. It's something not right. I know people who've had chronic headaches for 20, 30 years, and that pain that is continuously there transforms them because they just don't know what to do, they don't know how to deal with it, they start to lose grip on what they thought they were in their lives because of the gnawing of the pain. Yet, that pain means there's something not right in the state of affairs. Almost always, it has a cause either in a physical trauma. Let's say you've got some vertebrae in your neck or somewhere significant, which is pressing or creating pressure, which causes the pain. That's rare, but it happens. But generally, the reason is toxicity of some kind. You have toxins, poisons in your blood, in your cells, which cause that pain. And what do you have to do? You have to cleanse away those things which have influenced you, which have caused you to accept a situation that you don't want. So the pain is saying, something's wrong in this body. Do something about it. that can lead you on a journey to find out how to purify the body, how to detoxify heavy metal poisoning. Or maybe if you live in a place where there's arsenic in the water, arsenic poisoning. Like in Mayapur, for instance, that all the water there has arsenic in it because it's in the rock and underneath the ground that it leaches into the water. It's just an element which you just can't avoid in that place. So you take it, you get poison over the years. It affects you. It creates transformations. Or you have mercury poisoning from amalgam fillings. Or you have, you may have poisoning from your atmosphere, or perhaps even from the materials in your home, which are artificial, filled with formaldehyde and other extremely dangerous things. Or maybe the food you're eating is so filled with pesticides and herbicides that it's accumulating. Or the air you breathe is so polluted by factory wastes that you are, or water, becoming sick. So these signals are there. The pain is a signal. The pain is a signal to do something about it. Sometimes you can. Sometimes you can make an action to adapt in a positive sense. Sometimes you can't. Some people just have no way out of the pain they're in, so they end up drugging themselves to deal with it. And actually, we cannot judge such people and say that they're addicts or they are acting foolishly. It's just they are in a situation which is intolerable for them, the pain. They don't know how to deal with the pain. Let's talk about suicide. Or in another sense, let's talk about euthanasia. Euthanasia is a very complex subject, especially nowadays. The mood of the medical profession is to try to keep you alive. Often, people are in physical situations where they're going to die. Let's say it's obvious they're going to die. Nothing you can do about it. And they're just suffering like mad. Now, if this was an animal, nobody would think twice. Of course, if it was a pet, you'd think 1,000 times. But you wouldn't have, let's say, a religious or moral or a philosophical problem with causing the early death of this creature. Because you would know, as painful as it might be, that there's only more pain, and more pain in this creature's life coming. In a human being's life, we take the opposite point of view. Extend. Even if there's incredible pain, we don't want to pull the plug, even when somebody hasn't had consciousness for years, due to coma induced by some trauma. So we don't want to pull the plug. We're racking our conscience. We're thinking maybe someday they'll come out. Maybe they will. Maybe they won't. But euthanasia is another subject, like where somebody knows there is no hope in life for them. No hope. Medically, they're just going to die. And the pain is just increasing. And the drugs just are making them like a rock. So they want to have a medically assisted death. There was a doctor, I forgot, somewhere in Minnesota or Wisconsin, somewhere up in the North America, who was assisting patients to die. It became a huge thing. They took away his license. They put him in jail. They called him a murderer. Okay, in one sense, according to the very strict technical term, yes, he was a murderer. Because he accelerated the death process of people who wanted it done, who requested him to do it. Now, on one hand, it's all right to spend even millions of dollars to keep a person who's in extraordinary pain alive for some extra weeks or months. And on the other hand, it's illegal to help them leave this world while they still have some small amount of dignity in their lives. So euthanasia is a very controversial subject. It goes against the grain of the human being. The grain of the human being is live as long as you can. Even when you know you can't, those extra 5 days are so important. Of course, don't forget that hospitals make a lot of money keeping you alive. They keep charging every day enormous amounts of money, and the insurance companies, if you have them, are paying. So it's also related to money. It's also related to business. So this is a very complex subject. People have strong feelings on both sides. And religions will weigh in and say that you don't have the right to play God. And the underlying principle is only God can determine when the end of life shall be. Then we have the situation of suicide. Suicide is also an extremely difficult subject even to speak about. When somebody comes to the end of their line and says, I find no solution for me. They may even not be physically in trauma. They may not have pain physically. It may have nothing to do with the physical body. It might be related to the mind. Their mind may be so disturbed, their capacity to deal with a situation so warped that they cannot find their way to solution. In other words, they've lost the capacity to adapt. So their final act of adaptation is termination. Now, if somebody were to kill themselves in a violent fashion, rapidly, you know, jump off a building, shoot themselves in the head or whatever, this is considered to be something terrible. It's called suicide. But when somebody decides to terminate themselves by creating some disease, cancer is related to this in some respects, or by smoking themselves to death with cigarettes, or by eating themselves to death, drinking themselves to death, or any kind of excess which they know perfectly well is going to lead to their termination. This is acceptable. And it's acceptable because it's something that happens gradually. We don't have to accept it. It's not in our face. That death wish of somebody we know, their gradual suicide, as opposed to their rapid suicide, that's somehow more acceptable. And that's interesting because in one sense it is. It gives those around you time to adapt to your termination. Like, for example, those who are wasting away their lives in intoxication, those around them just reject gradually or let them go gradually because they see there's no hope. So it's gradually detachment from all around and then termination. Whereas this sudden suicide shocks everybody. Actually, they are both very similar. The problem with suicide, and this is the most serious problem, I don't believe the problem of how does God look at it is equal in seriousness to this problem that I'm going to state. That, you know, people think it's against the religion, against God, somehow against the religious principle, suicide. That you've got this duration of life, it's your responsibility to fulfill the duration of your life. And if you don't do it, this is some very great sin. I don't think that's really the problem. The real problem are those you leave behind. Because the shock, the inability to let go of that person who commits suicide, that person is forced to come back and see the pain of those who they've left behind, if any, to feel the consciousness of this trauma they have induced in others. Because in that sense, it's violence. It's violence. Because the violence manifests in the not only the violence against the body, which somehow you can deal with because people do violence against their bodies all the time, but I mean the violence against those who love you. The violence that you do against those who love you is enormous. And because of that violence, the suicide has a horrifying consequence. And you have to experience directly the effects of that violence on others. So you think you're going to get the easy way out of your situation, or rather to say, the only way out you can think of. You think that's your way to adapt. But it went on the just other side of this death. You're going to be very much entangled with those you've left behind, if you have. And of course, the universe, or rather those, the etherical part of it, which is taking care of all that kind of pain, works with you for healing. That's all right. But the suicide is not an easy answer. But what about euthanasia? Is it the same? Why is there another word for it? Why don't we just say assisted suicide? That somebody's helping you commit suicide. Well, maybe because suicide refers to what you do to yourself. And euthanasia refers to somebody else doing it to you with your consent. And murder refers to someone doing it to you without your consent. So it's this question of consent. Like the initiation of the action, and who consents to the action, and what's the point of the action. And because of that, there are all these moral implications. There are all these personal, emotional, and relational implications. Now, then there's the adaptation. We've talked about the extremes of the negative. But let's talk about the extremes of the positive. And the extremes of the positive have another aspect to them, which are very interesting. Like, for example, those who adapt to the good within them, to share that good with others, who adapt to the negativity in the world by doing positive things for others. I think ultimately you may make thousands of arrangements to adapt to the negative, but if you just... And of course, this is a theory, and it has shown to be true in many times, in many respects. If you just adapt positively, if you just give of yourself in service, if you just offer that spiritual good that you are in service, the negative dies out. The negative dissipates in you. Have you ever seen this fantastic phenomena, how doctors rarely get sick? They are surrounded by infectious diseases. I've even read just yesterday how infectious diseases are accounting for the majority of deaths in hospitals. There are bacteria on doctors' uniforms or gloves or anything, which are causing all kinds of, I think it's streptococcus-related bacterial infections, which cause death in hospitals. It's dangerous to go in a hospital. You can just die of unrelated causes. You can go in there for a sprained ankle and come out with a bacterial infection. That's a drastic example, but yet the doctors themselves, because they're always focused on the positive of the healing or the positive of the taking care of others, somehow don't get affected in the same way. Almost as if there's a certain immunity to them because of their position in that healing atmosphere. Okay, it's not the kind of healing atmosphere I'd like to be a part of, but it is still considered so. It is like that. How these nuns or these nurses or these people who are doing incredible relief work in places where there are crises or earthquakes or famines or all these natural disasters, these dedicated people who are just so powerful in their conviction to be of service, that they themselves somehow rise above that catastrophe that they go into and somehow do something which, even though they are in the middle of this catastrophe, they are somehow walking on top of it because of their spirit. In other words, they adapt to the trauma or the situations or the environment around them in such a positive way that they are standing on top of the situation. They are interacting with it, yet not subjected to it. Like, for example, when I'm on that airplane, there's no way to manifest in any form that positivity. I don't have that opportunity. I'm just sitting there and being subjected to what's around me because I don't have that opportunity. But when there is that opportunity, anybody can transcend the energy of their situation by being of a positive spirit to be of service, to transform that which is around them into something positive. And that creates a very different attitude, a very different atmosphere, a very different situation. And it is that which I would personally proclaim gives us the real shelter, the real foundation in our lives. The fact that we can adapt, the fact that adaptation is inevitable, the fact that adaptation is basically our responsibility, and the fact that we can direct that adaptation, which is what we do with our choices all the time anyway, by choosing to adapt in such a positive way that we can really make a very superior result or a superior effect of our situations. I personally think, although it's a little radical of me to say so, that those of us who are engaged in hearing these discussions or who are interested in anything that we do in Harry Media Land, we really all would respond and do respond best to being in situations where we can be of service like this, where we can adapt positively, to adapt positively in situations. That's why we feel good when we do something positive in a spiritual sense, or we can present understanding which assists people, or we can be of personal assistance to any other person, or we can be a shelter for others or give facilities for others, or we can just be there for others as a support. I think that is the mood which makes us feel best. Yet we have to adapt. The world is not always very accommodating of people like us. It's not that we can economically survive simply being of service all the time. So we have to make other adjustments that we can somehow live. And yet at the same time, wait for those opportunities or even create those opportunities where we can be of service. So I suppose my journey, which is a very long one, it was a practice of adaptation. It's like now I'm adapting to the time. Although my mind has adapted to the time, my body is much slower in that adaptation. So it's a question of moving forward, moving on, dealing with situations, dealing with life, and adapting.